Say you've been conned by Sam. How do you react? So far, we've heard people say they're hurt, maybe shrug their shoulders and say, "Hey, I'm gullible." And we've heard people who get really, really angry. In most cases, once people are deceived, they move on with their lives. Not with the people in this episode, though. Lorraine and Hillary, for example. Once Sam duped them and then ran out of their lives, they couldn't move on. Not yet. Not till they tried to track her down. I'm Justine Stafford. From RTE Documentary on One, this is The Real Carrie Jade. Episode 4. I'm Rebecca Fitzgerald. At the end of our last episode, we heard how there was some confusion over Lucy's real name, that maybe she also went by the name Samantha. That only emerged after Sam collapsed in a shop and was brought to hospital. And once this woman was discharged from hospital, Hillary brought her home to stay with her and recuperate.
I pulled out the sofa bed, I closed the curtains, I told her to go for a shower.
Hillary made Sam welcome.
And I said to her, I said, Lucy, I'll just take your clothes out. I just want to fold them up and, you know, make sure that you have everything, and gave her a clean towel, and as you do.
Remember, at this point, Hillary and Lorraine didn't really know who they were dealing with. But then, Hillary began to realise something when she picked up Sam's clothes to fold them.
And I was looking at the labels on her clothes and I seen Primark. I'm like, that's odd.
For everyone in Ireland, Primark means one thing. Penny's department store, the ultimate budget clothing brand.
And then her trousers, Primark. Considering that her mammy's a millionaire and she's a millionaire and she's marrying this and she's got a house on Glenageary on the Avondale Road, and yeah, I'm like, Jesus, I've got better clothes than her. Like, she's
so little alarm bell.
Yeah.
When someone tells us lies and we begin to question what we're being told, cracks appear. That's what was happening here. And as Hillary tells our producer, Ronan, she was beginning to keep her eye out for cracks in Lucy's story.
The Samantha thing was the first little one. The Primark was the second one. And the third one was... So when you have somebody staying in your house and they've just come out of hospital, you're not going to have a decent night's sleep. You're going to be quite conscious that somebody, and they could collapse or they could be dead or they could... So I left that door slightly open. And I said goodnight to her, and she was after having her shower. I gave her brand new pyjamas and she climbed into the bed and she says, "Oh, I'm really tired, I'm going to go to bed." Yeah, I got up first time round and I found her at the curtains, but she was peeking through, so she had them slightly pulled and she was kind of half eye in and half eye out. And I said, "Lucy, what are you doing?" And she goes, "Oh, the sky is so beautiful, it is. Oh my God, it's just magnificent, the sky." I said, "Lucy," I said, "you're only after coming out of hospital. Like, get back into bed, seriously, get back into bed. Like, if you collapse on the ground, like, you know, you're going to hit your head." "Oh yeah, 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 it's just the sky is so beautiful." Now, light pollution around here is rampant. There's no nice sky. It's roofs of houses and that's all you're going to see.
Hillary didn't know what to think. Was Sam watching out for someone, or was she being watched? It was impossible to know what was going on.
So then I come out a second time and she's back in the window again. And I'm like, "Lucy, what are you doing?" "Oh, no, 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 I just thought I seen, like, yeah, it's just so beautiful, the sky." And I'm like, "Lucy, seriously, get back into bed." Third time I went, "Lucy, what are you doing?" And she goes, "Oh, no, 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 it's fine. I'm going back into bed. I just thought I heard something." Grant, whatever. The look was that you were trying to see without being caught. Literally one eye out the curtain.
So she's paranoid?
Oh, completely, completely paranoid.
It's now late July 2016 and Sam is 28 years old. She's been living in Ireland for about 3 years now, moving from place to place, moving in with people, taking advantage of them, and then moving on. And now she's being cared for by Hillary. But Hillary has to work herself. So she drops Sam over to her friend, Lorraine, the hairdresser.
So we drove to Shankill and Lucy got out of the car. Lorraine was already there and Lorraine came out to meet us. She gave us a hug, as she always does. And as me and Lorraine are passing each other, we mumble to each other so that Lucy didn't notice. I said to Lorraine, I said, Lorraine, there's something going on. I don't know what it is, but there's something not right about this. There's something going on. Lorraine says, that's fine. Thank you very much. I'll find out. I'll let you know. I'll see you later. I said, be careful.
And you were going to take her into your house?
Yeah.
I did take her, but I was so scared for so long afterwards.
Lorraine is the person who'd introduced Sam to her friends.
So I brought her down home and I live in Wicklow.
Lorraine's house is way out in the countryside.
And I thought maybe she was having a bit of a breakdown. She might have needed a bit of a break.
Burnout
a bit, yeah.
Sam kept telling Lorraine that her fiancé was coming to collect her. But as time went by, he didn't turn up.
But anyhow, I had her in the house, and after the first night, I was Googling, nothing. Couldn't find anything. And I mean, I'm not a social media person, and you could actually find two or three things about me. You know, so it's kind of like, this is mad.
Are you naturally suspicious?
Actually, probably not, no. Like, I bring strays into the house the whole time.
Stray
people, stray dogs. Stray everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
Animals and humans.
Yeah. So she was only, I'd say, two nights in my house when I knew there was something seriously wrong. I seen a very sinister side to her that I was very scared by. I was cutting carrots and, like, her voice turned from that lovely upper class English or whatever. Her voice changed to something like I'd never heard before. And she basically said stuff about kids. Because she was involved with all the kids, she kind of thought that she should have the kids and not the people like Hillary Lynn.
That she deserved to take our children. She would be better than us.
And it was like, I should have them. They don't deserve them. And it was like something out of a horror movie. And I thought, she's actually going to pick up a knife and she's going to fucking stab me. Nobody's going to know I'm here.
Although she was scared, Lorraine decided she'd have to confront Sam, or the Sam situation. But to do that, she'd have to gather evidence and help. So she became an amateur detective.
I left the house as if I was going to work. I went straight down to the Garda station.
When she went inside the Garda police station, Lorraine simply told them about Sam.
And I told them I had this girl in my house and that I wasn't happy and that I had already been down to the council in Dunleary and the house she says that was hers isn't theirs. I said this completely different name on the plan of permission.
This was the house that Sam had pointed out with the builder's vans outside. She said it was being renovated for herself and her prospective husband. Then there was the pastor who Sam had said was to be this new husband.
You met with the pastor, didn't you?
Yeah.
And the pastor was already married with two kids.
I think he had it.
And he said, I know about her, I don't want to talk about her.
Yeah.
And that was it.
One by one, Lorraine was beginning to find out that each of the stories Sam had told her were false. Sheer fantasy. For example, the women's refuge that Sam had set up, all Lorraine knew was where it was supposed to be located.
And I checked all the houses on Northumberland Avenue and I said none of them are a women's refuge. I actually went house to house myself.
Lorraine detailed all of her investigations to the police. All the lies.
So the guard just said to me, he said, well, look at, so you're telling me you have a Walter Mitty character in your house and sure, that's your fault. You know, and I said, Grant, thanks very much for nothing.
Each day when Lorraine left her own home, Sam stayed behind, still recuperating. Or so Lorraine thought, until one day when she got home from work and her neighbour called out to her.
And said, Lorraine, who's your one that's staying with you? Because when you left this morning, she went out in a taxi 20 minutes afterwards. Now, the problem was, is every time Lorraine came back, Lorraine would say, what did you do, Lucy, today? And she'd go, oh, I walked around the garden in my bare feet, I did. And, oh, I just stayed in. I didn't have the energy to do this. And, oh, I just done this. I didn't go anywhere. I tried to get the strength to go down to the village and I couldn't get down to the village. And the neighbour was saying every day, 20 minutes after you left, a car picked her up or a taxi picked her up, and 20 minutes before Lorraine was due back, a car dropped her back or a taxi dropped her back.
Every day when Lorraine left home, she focused on trying to find out the truth about Sam.
Her next stop was the house where Sam had been staying in, with an elderly woman.
I didn't want to alarm her because she was an elderly lady. She was lovely, absolutely lovely lady who's since passed away. And I said to her, I said, oh, I'm just inquiring about Lucy. I said, where is she today? Is she around? And she goes, oh, no. She says she really needed a break. So she's gone to Morocco with friends. She says, it's strange you called that she didn't tell you, because the Gardaí called this morning and left a calling card. And I said, okay. I said, do you have the calling card? And she said, no. She said, I gave it to my daughter. So I said, God, and I didn't know the woman's daughter. I said, do you mind, I said, if I have your daughter's number? So she gave me the daughter's number and I contacted the daughter.
The daughter gave her the calling card and Lorraine went to the relevant Garda station to find out why they were now looking for Sam.
And I said, why did you leave a calling card there? I want to know. Like, they basically told me it's none of my business, which it isn't. So I still didn't know what that was about.
Sam stayed with Lorraine for a week. And then she left, saying her fiancé was picking her up. So then, Lorraine went to various Garda stations with a friend. They wanted to warn the guards that Sam might be out there, ready to attach herself to yet another vulnerable person. And it was while they were in one Garda station that a woman Lorraine knew walked in. She was the daughter of the elderly woman Sam had been staying with. This woman told the guards that Sam had left all her stuff behind in her mother's house. The Gardaí advised her to throw it out, but Lorraine asked the woman if she could look through the room Sam had stayed in to see if she could find any clues. The woman said yes, and they went around to the house.
And
what was the first thing you seen when you walked into the room?
It was the wedding dress.
Yes, you did hear that right. A wedding dress.
But that was
creepy. That was very, very creepy.
But a wedding dress, not to wear to a wedding, but, Hillary reckons, to help Sam remember which lies she was currently telling.
Reese having autism, we use a thing called PECS. PECS is visual aids. Mm. And it was like as if she was reminding herself when she woke up in the morning time, there's a wedding dress. I'm on the wedding dress scam at the moment. Why else would you buy a wedding dress when there's no wedding?
But there was all the stuff for the wedding as well. Like there was like hair appointments, kind of like invitation stuff that she was getting ready.
And again, like in Layla's house in our last episode, Sam left behind notebooks.
The bits of paper, the bits of stuff she'd written. She was threatening court action on the NHS in the UK.
What Lorraine didn't find was the deposit money people had given Sam for the trip to Lapland. She alone had given her about €1,500, not to mention what her friends, like Lynn, had paid Sam.
I'd say their money was all in my house when she was there in her big bag.
Backpack. Once she has that backpack, it has everything. There's two laptops and there's a lot of burner phones in it.
We found lots of burner phones.
How many and burner phones did you find in her room?
I can't remember. There's about 14. Oh, but I went and I threw them in across at the guards. I was so angry.
She gave them the evidence. Like, she gave them.
So you went into the guards with 14 burner phones?
Yeah.
Then Lorraine came across a bank card. This told her something she had yet to find out about Sam. Her real name.
I found the bank card from England and that was a different name. That was Samantha Cooks.
The Gardaí may not have been so interested in the burner phones, but they were interested in the bank card. Having a real name unlocked everything.
With the bank card then, they pulled up her on the system and they said to me, is that her? And I said, yeah.
Armed with this information, Lorraine went back to the couple who Sam had been working for as a childminder. She was determined to make them aware that their children could be at risk from someone with a fake identity.
I arrived at the door and he said, we're having a dinner party. I don't wish to discuss any further with you. I put my foot in the door. I said, yes, you fucking will. And you will fucking let me in or I will tell all the people in here. Now, so he called me through to a little area out the back and the wife came out as well and I put the pictures up in her face on my phone and she actually did break down. Like, she broke down, she was in tears and she said, look, I never knew.
And I was Samantha due to come back to them the following week?
Yeah.
Of course, that wasn't going to happen. Sam was already headed across Ireland to a new community, a new set of victims, and a new alter ego. She was no longer Lucy Fitzwilliams. She was now Lucy Fitzpatrick. This is a home in a tiny village in County Mayo, right over on the west coast of Ireland. Three children in the family are having their dinner. An older boy, Charlie, and twins, Ben and Abby. Their parents are Etna and PJ.
Abby, we're going in a few minutes.
Both working outside the home. And in August 2016, they advertised that they were in need of an au pair.
An au pair left.
Which is when Sam came into their lives.
Etna seemed to get her within hours. Would that be right? Yeah, she came very quickly.
Drove down this street to collect her, right along here as we're going. And just on this corner outside the town hall, there she was. Lovely, soft little face on her. And I did notice straight away, all she had was a plastic bag in one hand and a very small backpack. Do you know, like what you'd see on a toddler going to preschool, like a little backpack like that and a plastic bag. And I did say to her, is that all you have with you? And she said, oh, I'm just going to, you know, make sure this all works out okay. And if it does, I'll be getting my stuff sent over from Wicklow. And I thought, fair enough. Nice. That answered that question. I didn't ask any more.
Whether Sam had realised she needed a change or whether she just wanted to settle down, this chapter in her life as an au pair was going perfectly.
So she came and she met the kids and everything was great. And literally from there, she was unbelievable. Like, she'd do everything in the house. She was so organised. She'd be making meals. She'd be doing all the bits with the kids that I wouldn't be doing, like bacon and all that crack that I would be dreading.
Super nanny.
An absolute super nanny, honest to God.
She was probably the best au pair ever. She cooked. She done arts and crafts with the kids. There was no such thing as sitting down.
She'd always be in great humour.
This is Charlie, one of the three children Sam was caring for and living with. Charlie was just 5 years old when Sam arrived into his home in 2016. And he still remembers her.
And she used to say when we were eating, you get what you get and you don't get upset. And she taught us manners. Like, once I was sitting down at the table and, like, I wouldn't have any manners. And anyways, then I go, may I leave the table, please?
This is brilliant. They're learning manners and everything. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, this woman has been sent from the heavens. She my lunch. Like, I say, I put on weight when she was here because I was, it was just unreal. She was like a nanny McPhee. It was just, she was doing homework and everything. It was just took so much pressure off us. The two of us are working, we're two of us are self-employed people. It was tough going. And then she just took so much pressure off us. Homework was done. Dinners, cleaning was done.
And the children loved her, at first.
She was really nice to us. Well, she was really nice to me. She wasn't that nice to Abby. And she was all right to Ben.
She kind of loved Charlie.
This is Charlie's younger sister, Abby. In 2016, she was three.
She was always at Charlie. Charlie was like the favourite one.
It's like if we had a bag of sweets, she would give Charlie 90% of the bag.
Ben, Abby's twin brother.
I got 5% of the bag and then Abby got 1%.
She used to send me to bed. That's what she did. She didn't even give me anything.
Oh, why did she not like you? Why was she being harder on you than she was on the boys?
I don't know.
Yeah, we haven't cracked that one yet.
I kind of like peed my pants, and then she had to, she gave me boy pants.
And called her baby Michael.
She gave you boy pants?
Yeah.
Called her baby Michael.
Why did she call you baby Michael?
Because she was mean.
Did she knit? She was always knitting. Did she knit stuff for...
She tried to teach us how to knit. Abby wanted to know, but she wouldn't really teach Abby. She'd be up with me with the needle trying to show me. I hadn't a clue, like...
At the time, Etna and PJ weren't aware of Sam's manipulating behaviour towards their children. They were out all day, and they described Sam the exact same way Layla did, the woman in the Midlands who'd employed her as an au pair.
Mary Poppins, Nanny McPhee, whatever you want to call it, but there was a twist, a serious twist. Only for she kept lying, we wouldn't have known.
And you've heard those lies already too. Her mother owned a big US company, and she was killed by a drunk driver. Of course, when Etna Googled that last story, nothing turned up. Because of instances like this, Etna and PJ were beginning to get worried about this woman who they'd brought into their home to live with them. PJ decided to call into his local Garda station.
And I said, listen, how do we do a background check on someone, whatever? And were not 100%. And the policewoman said, if they're not on social media, it's time to look out. Everyone's on social media in some regards. So we checked, nothing. It was just like she didn't exist. She was like a Jason Bourne. Do you know what I'm saying? She just didn't exist. So we just kept asking for ID, and it was coming like everything else, but it was never coming. Everything was always coming in the post, but it never actually came.
Then, one day, when she was out in the car, Etna called her mother to tell her of their concerns about the new au pair.
And she said, well, you'd want to be sure who's in your house, you know, minding your kids. So she said, do you know what you will do? I'll pretend I need a chair covered.
At this stage, Sam had now been living with Etna's family for over a month. Plenty of time for a whole new raft of lies, including an odd one, that she was an expert furniture upholsterer.
And I'll ask her to come out and measure up the chair. And while I'm doing it, you go and check her room. So this is like, I know, seriously, it sounded so bloody wrong. And it's where I was robbing something in my own house. But that's what we did. So Lucy headed off with Mam. And Mam rang me. She said, I'll give you a sting ring so you'll know it's safe to go back to your own house. Because I was at work. So I went back to the house. I swear to God, you'd think I'd broken into my own house.
You must have felt awful.
I felt terrible. But I walked into the room and my heart just dropped. There was nothing in the room. There's a pair of runners and a t-shirt and a few notebooks on the bed. And that was it. Like, there was nothing else in the room. And I went, Jesus Christ, where's... The backpack was gone and there was nothing else to be found. There was nothing in the rooms, nothing. I went, Jesus Christ, this one, there's something. There's just something not adding up. So I left, gave Mam the string ring to say I was gone so she could bring her back home. And I rang my husband and I just said, we're going to have to talk to her this evening. And he said, fine, we'll have a chat with her later on. I'm sure PJ's a real kind of like, I'm sure there's a perfect explanation.
Etna and PJ had no choice here. They had to find out just who was caring for their children. Who was living with them in their family home? Whatever way you dress it up, this chat was going to come down to confronting Sam. Or Lucy Fitzpatrick, as they thought she was.
Anyway, we got the kids to bed, the usual crack, and then Peter went, Lucy, do you mind coming up to the sitting room? We'll have a word. And she was like, okay, what's this about? You know, kind of. And he said, well, look, everything's working out really well and, you know, we'd love it to continue. So, you know, in order to go to the next stage of this whole nannying thing and for us to be sure, is there any way you could give us some identification? And she just lost it. Lost it. She started crying. She got told us that we didn't trust her. Threw the toys out of the pram very quickly and very suddenly, which, of course, straight away we were like, oh, Jesus, what have we done? She got out, she stormed down the hall. And PJ, who's a very calm, he got so mad. He walked down the hall after her and he said, if you don't come back up to the sitting room, I'm calling the guards. And when he mentioned the guards, she really flipped.
And I don't know why I said that. I just said that. And I suppose only afterwards when she left, that was the trigger. Straight back up again, sat down, nice as pie.
And she was like, if there's no level of trust, that, you know, this is it, finished. I'm calling quits from here and la la. I said, can you just show us something with your name on it? I will give it to you as soon as I have it. And that'll, and I was like, no. You know, like, have you not even a bank card or, you know, just something that says Lucy Fitzpatrick on it? It's not that hard. But no, she had nothing.
She was crying. We were saying, like, listen, whatever you've done, we'll help. Like, you know, whatever you've done previously, not having a clue what you do. We say, listen, we want to help. Things are working here. We want you to stay on. Whatever it is, just tell us. You know, we might be fit to help, or we might know someone that might be fit to help, or whatever.
This went on for, I'm going to say, about 2 hours. And she said, I'd like to speak to Etna on her own. And he said, I'm going to bed. So he headed off to bed. And she was like, well, I didn't want to say in front of PJ, but I came from a women's refuge. So then I was like, oh, Jesus. And I'm not a gullible sort of person, really. And I was like, okay, well, that makes sense, you know. And she said then, but if there's no trust, and there obviously isn't, because she was going to leave in the house that night. And I said, look it, just go to bed. If you want to leave tomorrow, I'll bring you to town and you can go. You know, and she goes, okay. So she went to bed upset that night, and I went up to the room and I said, I told PJ, and he said, it's absolute bullshit. He just believed none of it, which is normally the other way around in our relationship. So I was like, oh, Jesus Christ.
That night, while Etna and PJ went over the day's events in bed, down the corridor, Sam was in her bed. We don't know what she was thinking, but she must have known her alter ego of Lucy Fitzpatrick was rumbled now. So, what was she going to do next?
Got up the next morning and she was obviously pottering down in the room. I could hear her and I went down and I knocked on the door and I was expecting her like to be upset or whatever. And she went, "Good morning," like that. And I just went, "Oh, good morning." I said, "How are you after last night?" "Everything is fine, wonderful." You know, like there was no problem. It was like nothing had happened. And I was like, "Okay." And she goes, "I might get a lift to town with you when you're going." And I said, "Are you leaving?" And she said, no, I'm just going to town." So I drove just over there at the clock because there's a pass machine there. And I took out her wage for the week and I handed it to her. And she said, "Bye, children." And she hopped out of the car and she walked down the street here. And I watched her walking down the street. And in my head, I went, "I'm never going to see that lady again." Do you know? And that was it. That was the last time I saw her, like.
She was gone.
We were crying when she left because she made us like her so much.
Etna wasn't crying. She was reeling in disbelief. She went back home and went to the room Sam had been sleeping in.
And I pulled open the drawer in the locker beside the bed. And there was about, I'm going to say maybe 3 or 4 dismembered mobile phones. They were only like the little Tesco mobiles or something, you know, nothing fancy. Yeah. So there was like bits of batteries and the screen of one and, you know, they were all mixed up. But there was a SIM card. So I managed to get one back together and the SIM card in and there was only one mobile phone number on it. There's nobody's name or anything. It was just one mobile phone number. That's all I could find on the phone. And I rang it and it was Lorraine's number, Lorraine in Wicklow.
It was almost 8 weeks since Sam left Lorraine's home in Wicklow as Lucy Fitzwilliam and moved in with Etna and her family in the west of Ireland and became Lucy Fitzpatrick. Throughout all that time, Lorraine had searched for this Lucy to no avail. And then, totally out of the blue, she receives this call from Etna.
And she said to me, "You're Lucy's friend." And I said, "Who the fuck are you?" Like, I was nearly in tears. I was devastated.
When you hear how Lorraine reacts to Etna's call, you have to understand that when you talk to Sam's victims, there are two things going on. They want her caught, but they're also afraid of her. That's why some of them want us to hide their identity. They're afraid she's going to come back at them. Lorraine has already received some calls from unknown numbers that she's afraid are from Sam. So when she gets the call from Etna and Mayo, she's wary.
I thought it was Lucy. Or Lucy had got someone to do it. And I said, "I don't know who you are. And I'm certainly not her friend. And I said, I am certainly not speaking to you until you speak to the Gardaí. You go to your local Gardaí and I will go to my guard station and then I will speak to you through the Gardaí. But not till then." She broke down and she said, "You're frightening me now," she said. And I said, "Have you kids?" And she said, "Yes."
I started getting a bit thick and I was like, "You need to tell me who's been minding my kids."
And I said, "You need to go to the guard station. Is she gone from your house?" And she said, "Yes." And I said, "Okay, she's gone from your house. Just mind your kids and go to the guard station."
When Etna and PJ placed an ad for an au pair, the last place they thought they'd find themselves was in a police station, reporting concerns about someone they brought into their home to live with them.
So I said to my mother, "You're going to have to sit with the kids." And myself and PJ went to the guard station. Went in, up to the counter, like, "What do you say?" We were told to come to ye because we've had this lady in the house called Lucy Fitzpatrick minding her kids for the last 7 weeks. And we don't think she is who she says she is. Like, the guard was just like looking at me. And he goes, "Come on down to an interview room." So we went to the interview room. And when we explained things to him, he left. And he came back about 25 minutes later and he sat in front of us and he just went, "I can't say a whole lot to you, but don't let that woman near your kids." And I was like, "How can you say that?" Like, I said, "Who is she?" And he said, "Really, I can't say, but..." And he told me her name was Samantha Cooks. And he was like, "Don't go Googling her." He knew well we were going to Google her.
This was a frightening situation that Etna and PJ found themselves in. They also discovered from a local hotel that Sam had booked a function room for several weeks to teach a sign language course to parents of children with Down syndrome. Etna cancelled the booking. That was in the autumn of 2016. And for the next few months, everyone loses the trail of Samantha Cooks. Her whereabouts, unknown. If you encountered Sam at any stage in Ireland, including during 2016 and 2017, please email us at documentaries@rte.ie. By March 2017, the following year, we know that Sam was living just outside Cork City, near the south coast of Ireland, where she had yet another au pair job. And she was also attending a post-leaving cert course for students midway between second level school and third level colleges.
That bridge back there must cause you nightmares, does it?
And she became a regular customer of a taxi driver named Julie.
Not too bad. In the mornings now, there's a lot of traffic there. You see that? There's a house now. You'll see an archway here. And this is how brazen she is now. She told me she was buying this house up here, which is 1.something million, right? Up here, up at the top here.
With the big, huge castle gates.
Yeah, yeah. She was buying that house.
Enter Rebecca Fitzgerald, the new alias for Sam Cooks.
And we went up, and she'd actually go in and around the back of the house and the whole lot, and then she'd say she was going for post or something. I don't know what she was doing. And we'd come back out and go wherever then. But I actually found out later on, my nephew's girlfriend's friend's father owns the house, but I didn't know at the time. Imagine, I mean, here I was driving in around this man's house, and she was going in around by the conservatory and everything, like, nuts, absolute nuts.
At this point, in 2017, Sam was pretending to be a child psychologist, and Julie was ferrying her around to visits in the homes of various children she was supposedly treating.
The school, she was in there doing some kind of classes with special needs children, and there was a lot of mothers paid for the classes, and I think she did one or two and just never turned up anymore, you know. And she was getting so interested, like, in my daughter was young at the time, she was 13, 14, and she was taking her to Disneyland, she was taking my friend's little boy to Disneyland, she was taking all these people to Disneyland.
Tell the kids.
Oh yeah.
Sam told Julie that she was setting up a day centre for children with additional needs.
There'll be a sensory room and this and that and blah de blah. And then I asked her where was the premises going to be? And she'd made up some story that it was going to be off McCurtain Street and it was down one of them roads. And I was like, okay, so obviously I went down. And of course, there was a building under construction, right? And then I was like, am I imagining that she's away with the fairies and it's not true? Or is it true? But then she said she was opening up a second property, right? And I said, so where was that going to be? So she said, down by the library in Glamire. And of course, I know Glamire like the black of my hand because I've been working down there years. And I knew 100% there was nowhere down there that could have been converted into anything. There's nothing down there. And I said, nah. And then, what happened then? Oh yeah, and then we were having a meeting.
This meeting was for people like Julie, who were supposed to be working in the new day centre.
Our producer, Ronan.
But we've been in touch with another woman who was at that meeting. She wasn't supposed to be working in the fake day centre. She was supposed to be a babysitter. She'd answered an ad to be a babysitter. She was interviewed by a woman named Rebecca in Rebecca's home in Cork. Rebecca explained that she was looking for a babysitter for her two disabled children and that her husband was currently abroad, adopting them. Of course, there was no husband, no children, and the house where the woman went for an interview turned out later to be the house where Sam was living in as an au pair. More elaborately, there was even a WhatsApp group for this babysitting job. It included Rebecca, her husband, and a woman named Shan, who was described as an SNA. An SNA is a special needs assistant, a teacher's assistant who works to help young children with additional needs. And even more convolutedly, the woman was asked to go on a training course in the local hotel where she'd learn how to care for severely disabled children. That was the meeting Julie, the taxi driver, was at.
24th of May 2017, feeding clinic. I'm trying to organise a feeding clinic as this needs to be...
Julie still has the emails from the time.
If we can make that work. Regards, Rebecca and Catherine. Catherine was her business partner.
Who is it? She exists.
No, nobody existed. Anyway, what was I saying?
You're talking about going to this meeting.
Oh yeah, we went to this meeting anyway. And she was waffling and loving all the attention and everybody, you know, around her. Oh, you're brilliant, Rebecca. But anyway, she came with this, oh, I just want to show you how to feed through a tube. And we were like, oh, why? Are we going to be, oh yeah, you're going to be doing that. And then I said, not a fucking chance. Not a chance. There is no way that you can sit there for 2 minutes and show us how to feed a child through a tube and we're qualified. No way.
Did you say that out?
No. No, I didn't. I just walked out. And I think she kind of knew that, you know, I knew something was up. And then I said, no. I'm ringing the guards, right? So I rang the guards and I said, look, I said, there's a woman down here posing as a therapist. I said, she's going to children's homes. She hasn't got money when she gets into the taxi. And when I collect her, she has 50s in her hand and she pays me then. I said, and there's just something not right with this woman. You have to check her out.
The guards contacted the family Sam was au pairing for, and she then disappeared.
So you never confronted her?
No, she was gone. When I went to the house the next day, she was gone.
A few weeks later, Julie was contacted by a Garda detective.
And he says to me, can I meet you? And I was like, yeah, okay, fine. He came down and he met me up in the schoolie and he came over to my car and he had a folder this thick on her.
So about 6 inches thick.
Thick.
One of the names in that file was of a client Sam visited in a small rural village far outside Cork City. He's a father whose child was in primary school at the time and who was struggling in class. He wanted a special needs school assistant for the child. To get an assistant, the child had to be assessed, and that assessment would then be sent to the Department of Education. To have such an assessment carried out, they needed a qualified child psychologist. And that's how Sam wrangled her way into their lives.
We were put in touch with her by a play therapist. She recommended this woman who worked with other children. She was obviously duped as well.
We voiced up the father's words.
She came out to the house 7 or 8 times, and she definitely seemed to know what she was talking about. She was very competent in what she was doing. She had done some kind of psychiatric course in the UK. Now, the strange thing was she came to us in a taxi, and her story was that her mother had died in a car crash. She said she was afraid of driving, and I was kind of thinking, you're a psychologist and you're afraid of driving, you know? So she came out, and as I said, she was very helpful, and we actually had her down to the school, speaking with the principal and teachers, and they were all very impressed by her as well. She's very believable. And even the things she was saying in the school, the teachers were saying, geez, yeah, write that down, that makes sense, we should do that.
Whatever about the work Sam was doing with the child, which was costing 100 euro per session, the child's parents still needed an assessment for them. Sam then sent them emails, purporting to be from the Department of Education, saying that their approval for the assistant was forthcoming. But nothing happened. Eventually, the parents got fed up and told Sam that they were considering going to another psychologist. What happened then? You've guessed it. Sam disappeared, stopped answering emails and phone calls, and they never heard from her again.
So I went down to the local Garda station, and I made a statement, and then the Garda there, he sent out a description of her. He got a lot of hate then back from Dublin and over in the East Coast, where people had been conned before.
Despite the fact that Sam tricked the man and his wife into giving her 800 euro, he's not that sore about it.
There wasn't huge damage done in the sense that the information she'd provided and the help that she gave was actually good.
The police didn't feel the same though. Looking back over some of the other reports made to Gardaí, they felt that Sam needed to be stopped and brought to justice. So they put together a case and prosecuted her on fraud and theft charges, including stealing the deposit money for the Lapland trip from Lynn and Hillary. In May 2019, the Gardaí finally had their case together. 4 charges of stealing, 3 relating to the bogus Lapland trip and 1 to the fake child assessment. It went to trial in the district court, and Sam was found guilty on all charges. She was sentenced to 14 weeks and 2 days in Limerick prison. But just like her surrogacy fraud case in Britain, the sentence was suspended. No custody. this time on condition that she keep the peace and be of good behaviour. That court case took place in Cork. The next time we hear from Sam, she's travelled west, along the coast, to County Kerry, where she's no longer a psychologist or an au pair, but a writer, a disability activist, a coder, an Airbnb host, and a wannabe subject of a documentary about her treatment for a terminal brain disease. That's where we're going in episode 5, which is titled, I'm a Victim.
It seems that these people are now suing her. This is just outrageous. This woman has a terminal illness. Even if the judge threw the whole thing out and awarded her millions and millions, they'd just wait her out because she's going to die.
If you've any knowledge of Samantha Cooks, a.k.a. Carrie Jade Williams, Sadie Harris, Lucy Fitzwilliam or Rebecca Fitzgerald, please contact us immediately and in confidence by email to documentaries@rte.ie or on any of the RTE Documentary on One social media platforms. The Real Carrie Jade is narrated by myself, Justine Stafford. Music is composed by Fergal O'Connor and performed by Fergal Antonio O'Flaherty. The sound engineer is Ruth Kennington. The series is produced by Ronan Kelly and Liam O'Brien with the team from RTE Documentary on One.